This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hello and welcome to In Conversation, a Dublab podcast where each week we will bring you interviews from the Dublab Radio Archives.
Dublab.com. It's Celsius Drop. My name is Frosty and happy to be here. As always, Thursday mornings going strong. 10 a.m. to noon here on Dublab Los Angeles time. And glad to have you in the place. Thrilled to be here. Today we're going to have a very special guest, Tashi Wada. He's going to be talking about his new album, fittingly titled New. And it's on Revenge International. Tashi Wada, how are you?
Hi, good.
Good morning.
Happy to be here.
I like you mentioned a minute ago that it's sort of like seeing someone in the airport, because there's like scattered energy, everybody rushing around, you know, checking their boarding passes, and you know we're about to take flight, hopefully to the same destination.
Yeah, it's fun to see everyone doing what they're doing here.
Mm-hmm. Drinking coffee. Well, thanks for coming in. You have a really great new album, part of the Revenge International Freakways series. This is volume 14, Freakways, a multi-generational bridge between creative musicians. This one is Tashi Wada with Yoshi Wada and friends. Freakways volume 14, and it is called Nue. I've been calling it New, but It is indeed new regardless, and it's a great one. We'll hear a bit of this, I'm sure, during the show. If not, people can dig it on up themselves, because it is out there. Tell us about the origin of that project, or any other project.
I'd been wanting to do a large-scale recording project like this for a while, and it took a while to find the right circumstances, but as with many things, things just kind of lined up at a certain point. I had been performing with my dad, Yoshi Wada, for about 8 years, and we never really found our way into a recording studio in a proper way. We did one recording. Over the years, we had involved a lot of different people. Julia Holter, was performing with us for the past few years. And Corey Fogel, the drummer, was also performing with us. So this record was a way to kind of gather all these things up and bring some new people into the mix. They're all friends.
And did you meet them? You're at CalArts.
Yes.
Are those, because both of Corey and Julia were also CalArts, correct?
Yeah. I mean, CalArts is a pretty wide network of people in LA. I didn't actually go to school with either of them. Okay. But, you know, through the network of people at CalArts, I met them. Yeah,
it is definitely has its tendrils deep in Los Angeles and beyond. But you know, you were studying composition there, or what was?
Yeah, I moved to LA to study composition at CalArts with James Tenney, who passed away shortly after me arriving there. But I did work with him for a year. And
what kind of imprint did he leave on you, if any?
I would say, I mean, it's partially historical. He was very deeply involved in understanding the history of music and how it related to science and to the visual arts. He would make these diagrams where he was comparing the different time periods. And I mean, just basic things that I was interested in, psychoacoustics, tuning, alternate tuning in music. These are all things that he had pioneered over the years in his different types of work.
So it was good that you caught him for a year, and but also kind of continued in a way working within his world, because you were also involved in kind of an archive of he made postcards, right?
Yeah, and now for a while now I've been working on his archive. Yeah, it's a extensive project because he was a very prolific person. He had, you know, he was involved in Fluxus, Bell Labs, all kinds of things, and all of these, this different type of media needs to be sorted out. He was in touch with, you know, people from Varez to people more recently. So
Kanye West.
Yeah. I mean, you would be surprised.
Yeah, probably. I mean, well, what's interesting is the, you know, in the 60s and 70s at CalArts and the work that was being done there. And I mean, a whole new world, you know, whether it was the Fluxus group, you know, or the, you know, in a way, Children of Cajun kind of aesthetics, or all of these things that were brewing and were kind of were fringe, but also had some institutional connections. But people doing this really good open work, those things do filter in to the mainstream in many ways, sometimes even, you know, subliminal kind of ways that they have an effect, just ways to view sound, you know, pure sound, which is interesting. You mentioned your father, who's one of the main collaborators on this new record, Nue Yoshiwada. And so growing up in a space with a father who was part of the Fluxus movement and doing really interesting compositional work, working with psychoacoustics and other things, how did that kind of color your experience? And we'll hear a bit of music so you can kind of get placed in that. But maybe we should actually hear the music first and then talk about it. What do you think?
Sure. Yeah.
That could be good. And we'll loop back Nue again, the new album. As Tashi mentioned, collaborating with Yoshiwada, Julia Holter, Corey Fogel, Simone Forti, Cole Imgian, and more. But we're going to hear a piece right now from Yoshi.
This is a, well, with an album like this, there's so many influences going into it. So this is I guess this would be a sort of collaborative.
So this is a piece from Nue.
Yes. This is from Nue, yes.
And what's the title of this?
This is Double Body.
Double Body. Yeah. So we're going to give you Double Body here on dublab.com. Double Body, and that is from Tashi Wada with Yoshi Wada and Friends, Freakways Volume 14 on Revenge International. What's the scoop? Tell us about Double Body.
Double Body. I guess I'm not sure if I have that much to say about that track individually, but I with the album in general, I was interested in trying to create a world, and within all these little worlds that I guess like, sort of like a sequence of dreams, that was, and one of the major for myself, one of the major aspects of this album was working with Cole, MGN, who produced the album. If you listen to this in comparison to other work I've done or other work my dad has done, it has much more of a produced sound. Mm-hmm. That was definitely interesting to me to go into a studio and treat all of the recorded material as malleable and not necessarily just recording a performance, which is kind of more typical of experimental music, is that, especially when it involves like acoustic instruments, is that you try to replicate something that exists out in the world as a performance or practice. And this was much more, I guess it ultimately it's more traditional in the sense of recording. You use the studio, but for me, that process was interesting to dive into, and Cole was like the perfect person because he's a wizard and all of that stuff.
So the recorded material, was that all recorded in the studio and then there was an assembly stage and kind of a composition stage, or was the composition stage also within the recording, the raw recorded elements? What do you consider the kind of shaping of every moment?
The material was composed in advance. And then it was, I mean, essentially it was really just shaped through mixing and editing and processing. And so I guess I wouldn't say there was a whole lot of composing in at that phase, but the sort of atmosphere of the recordings is a big part of it for me. Of course, there's like the groundwork of the compositions. That comes across, that there's these sort of multiple layers of things going on.
You mentioned earlier psychoacoustics. For people out there who might not understand what that is, can you just kind of briefly explain that? And also, is that challenging to essentially transfer that to tape? You know, you're working in the acoustics of a specific space, but then you're flying it into, you know, whatever wizard box Cole is using and you're working with, but to then kind of transfer that to the final stage to the listener of the recorded material.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I think that does sort of tie back to what I was saying. I mean, with, you know, with recordings and, you know, you have no idea of how people are going to be listening to them in their car, on their phone, probably mostly on their phone at this point. It's less likely someone's going to be sitting in front of like a really nice stereo. But of course, you know, you want to, and so you want to make, I don't know, for myself, you want to make it so that it transfers across these. It's not just in an ideal circumstance you hear everything. So the acoustical effects, you know, beating, when two tones are close together and they interfere with each other, or the tuning. I guess the idea with this for me was to make it something that was transferable in different circumstances. 'Cause, you know, it's that's the thing about, like, with a recording a performance, you're not in the space, you don't have the energy, et cetera. So, Yeah, I don't know. It felt honest to me to try to do it this way, even though it's like you're creating an artificial space in a way.
I mean, that's the beauty of recorded music, is it can be its own thing and live separate from a live performance. A couple months back, you performed in Los Angeles with your father, with Corey, with Julia, and the sheer kind of power of it. I mean, there's points where you and your father are both playing bagpipes. There's kind of air raid sirens happening, large kind of kettle drums. You're feeling this boom, big kind of power. For you in those spaces, playing with an ensemble like that, is it tell us about the feeling of being there with friends and kind of bringing forth these sounds, both big but also very kind of controlled and spare at certain times as well.
I grew up performing since I was a kid. I played classical piano, and so the live performance situation is kind of, I guess that would be more what I live for. It's like the thing that kind of keeps it going, and that's the driving force for me, for sure. And I think that's where everything gets figured out for me, like in a live situation.
Do you kind of make mental notes about sounds or moments while you're playing to then hopefully replicate or record something or kind of move in a different compositional direction after the fact?
Yeah, for sure. And in terms of like writing music and composition, some work I do is very precisely notated, and there's a very clear goal. But in many cases, there is a large element of improvisation. Mm-hmm. So in that looseness, all kinds of things happen, and sometimes you can remember them. Sometimes you try them again, and they're not what you thought they were. But a lot of stuff comes out of that, and definitely knew it as an album. Much of this came out of doing stuff live and experimenting in that way. And after a while, it settles. And
Is there a piece on the record that you right now distinctly remember kind of being somewhat birthed from a live experience that we could hear? Something that might have taken shape first performing live and then filtered into recorded work?
I would say
maybe it's tricky because there's also probably snatches and elements with it.
No, we can do this. I would say Fanfare is, there's a lot going on in it, and it's very layered, but the general kind of energy behind it is something that my dad and I kind of always strive for at some point. I mean, not an exclusion of other things, but in a performance, that's like the energy behind that is something that's kind of a centerpiece.
Well, let's get energetic. Let's hear Fanfare. This is from Tashiwada with Yoshiwada and Friends, Nue Frequays, Volume 14 on Revenge International. It's dublab.com here with Tashiwada. Yoshiwada and Friends. What was the instrumentation on that?
So there's synths, bagpipes, percussion, sirens, and electronics. Yeah, I think that's it. Yeah.
It's beautiful. The gorgeous kind of dynamics of that piece. There's also a great video, and it's a video that's part of our Border Blaster season 2. If you cruise to borderblaster.org, TV show on KCT. Gonna give a quick plug to that, but happy to share that video. And the bagpipes. Can you tell us a bit about your connection to the bagpipes?
I mean, my connection to bagpipes is pretty straightforward. It comes from my dad's playing bagpipes, and he started playing in the I guess the late 70s. I don't claim to play bagpipe well, but I basically just taught myself with through my dad, and he studied like Scottish bagpipe. It's like a passion of his to this day. It's, you know, it's very physically demanding, and my dad is in his 70s, mid to late 70s now, so it's hard to keep it up, but it's fun. It's very muscular, and when you do it, I mean, it's definitely one of these things that when you're on a stage and you're playing bagpipe, it's like this kind of, it feels athletic, and it's
what is the most is it the breath, is it the arm, is it kind of all the elements?
It just feels like an extension of your body. That it feels like a, you know, you're blowing into this animal skin. Mm-hmm. I mean, at this point they're mostly synthetic, but the one I have is an actual animal skin. It's probably not typical anymore because, you know, the synthetic is just easier, but it feels like another lung. And it's so loud, especially when you have multiple bagpipes and you play bagpipe generally in unison, so it amplifies and you get this crazy overtones as it goes in and out of phase and tune. Yeah, it's very primal, as you know, as you would expect. That was the instrument was, you know, for this military instrument.
Was there a point where you specifically said, I want to start experimenting with bagpipe? I mean, you mentioned it was kind of there. Your father has been playing it for a long time. Were you drawn to it?
No, I mean, I think it just kind of evolved pretty naturally. I mean, it really was, it is my dad's thing. And I, through us performing together, I was always playing on keyboard and organ and mm-hmm. things like this and electronics. And they really, bagpipes really, they really come to life when you play them together. So, yeah, it was kind of out of necessity. I mean, one thing we were doing, which was for a long time, which was very interesting, is we would travel to different parts of the world, mostly Europe, and invite local bagpipe players. And you find bagpipe all over the world. You know, of course, in United Kingdom, you know, Scotland, but also Spain, mm-hmm. Italy. And they all have their own form of bagpipe music. And it's really amazing to see the different styles. And it's usually very tied to the place and the culture and the, you know, the folk music.
Yeah.
In Scotland, it's more classical music, but yeah.
And your whole life, you've had this kind of arts space around you. Both your father, composer, performer, your mother was also involved is in the visual arts as well. Did this just always seem kind of to be a possibility? Was there no questioning? Because I think that these are things that are very, you know, progressive, kind of unique art forms. What type of visual arts was your mother and is your mother involved in?
Well, she had a gallery with her then partner in San Francisco, and they did a lot of performance. And you know, it was the Bay Area conceptual art scene: Terry Fox, Tom Marioni, that whole world of the '70s, early '70s. No, more like late '70s, I guess. At that point.
And would you attend a lot of these performances?
This was before I was my okay. time, but that is where my parents met. My dad was performing there. Yeah, the gallery is called Sight. There's not really that much information about it online, but there is a catalog they made to kind of commemorate the gallery after it was. I think it was towards the end of it, but really amazing programming. They would have one artist. The current artist who had the space for a month select the next artist.
Great.
So it's nice. It's passing around this scene.
Kind of an exquisite corpse curation or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And speaking of performance, there's an artist who's involved in this record and you've been involved with for a while, Simone Forti. Can you tell us about your connection to Simone and her involvement in this?
Yeah. Simone, I grew up in New York, in Manhattan, in Soho, and my dad and Simone go, you know, way back into late 60s. I think they probably met around then. But they bought a floor of a loft building in Soho, and apparently it was previously owned by the I think it's Barnum and Bailey, the circus.
Wow.
So they had elephants in there apparently. But anyway, they bought a floor together and split it in half. This is on Spring Street between Mercer and Broadway. So she was basically our neighbor when I was growing up, and Simone. And then she moved to Vermont, and we reconnected when I moved to LA to go to CalArts, and she's been living here. She was teaching at UCLA, and yeah, she's become a very close friend. I put together a collection of her recorded works, which I don't think people knew about. I don't think I would have known about it unless I was, you know, since I was close to her, I could had access to these things.
And people know more of her dance.
Yeah. Yes. She's known primarily as a dancer, mover, yeah, choreographer. The Box Gallery, run by Mara McCarthy, they've done a lot of work, like, dealing with her archive and making all this other side of her work known. Because she's worked in, you know, visual arts and, you know, video, everything.
So this collection called Al Di La, and it's on Saltern, just came out this year, Simone Forti. Should we hear a piece from this? Do you want to hear even a snippet of a piece from this? And then I'd love to maybe hear kind of a touch of how she touched the new album and talk about that.
I actually have a track that didn't make it onto the record, which is
exclusive.
It will be obvious why we didn't include it, but
you know, Tashi smells so weird. Like, you don't use Mugged. This is for all you radio folks out there.
I'll just play it, and then we can. The title doesn't need to be said before.
Let's check it out. Here is a piece from Simone Forti. It's Dub Lab here with Tashi Wada. Yes. Well, you mentioned that it would be obvious why it wouldn't make it onto the record, but please elaborate. Why wouldn't that make it on the record?
Yeah, we wanted to include it. It was supposed to be like a last track. We did go through all of our possible channels to get permission to use Fool on the Hill in whatever capacity, but, you know, all the doors shut. I don't think the people who are in control has really kind of got the humor and the playfulness of it.
But. Which is funny because it's such a humorous and playful kind of piece to begin with.
Yeah.
And so much of the work.
But yeah. I was happy to try, and
yes.
I was curious to see where it would go, and it didn't go very far, but
yeah.
It's called Fool on the Hill, an Italian folk song, by the way.
The journey is the destination, right? So
yeah.
the just simply having the conversations, I'm sure was probably interesting. Yeah. So good. So Simone Forti, and again on Saltern imprint, there is Al Di La. And this is a collection of Simone Forti's sound works that Tashi has released. And coming up at Zebulon, October 17th, that's going to be a great one. Lots of good friends. I don't know if that is that surprise. Should I not say who the friends are?
Or does No. Yeah, Simone is joining us, and Jessica Kenny, amazing vocalist, and Laura Steenburge, dear old friend, all local. I'm really happy that they're all going to be part of it. In addition to Julia and Corey.
Can't wait for that. That's October 17th at Zebulon. More information at zebulon.la, October 17th. Cruise on by. So you mentioned Julia Holter, long-term collaborator, and she's one of the friends on this Friendly album, but you also play with her on her albums as well. Can you talk about that creative partnership?
Yeah, Julia and I, we've known each other for so long now. I guess it's another one of these situations where very organically we've become involved in each other's projects. We have some projects together. I'm playing her band now, and she has a new record coming out later this month, Aviary.
Is great. Such a beautiful album.
Yeah, and similar people. Corey also plays in her band. Cole worked on her record. I don't know. That's also maybe an extension of like my relationship to playing music with my dad. It's like it feels very natural to just be working with close friends and having that kind of those long relationships that have developed over time and influencing each other and pushing each other and traveling together. You know, these.
Was it CalArts that brought you to Los Angeles? Because you mentioned you were in New York prior and kind of grew up in New York. Did CalArts pull you out here, and have you stayed in LA? Made this your primary home since?
Yeah, I did live in the Bay Area in San Francisco for different periods of time. But yes, I moved here originally to go to CalArts, and I've been here more or less consistently since 2005. So it's been a while now. Yeah.
And is it a space that you feel fosters collaboration, or is it just kind of the lucky circles that you've found yourself in?
Yeah, I mean, I would say yes. I also did have the opportunity to go to CalArts, which is like, you know, it's a pretty extensive network, and not everyone has that chance. So I feel lucky for that. And having lived in other cities and been part of other music scenes, the LA scene of music feels, I don't know, there's a kind of fluidity among the different like genres of music and thing that just, it just feels very open-ended, and I don't feel like I get stuck in one area of music, which is good for me and just my curiosity about other types of music. A space like Zebulon is like, it's amazing that one night to the next, what you hear there, and that's perfect for me as a music listener, and you know, to just absorb things like that.
Yeah, it seems to be a broad, expansive city as far as the embrace of different sounds or overlapping of communities, which also then filters into what comes out of the kind of original music realm happens. Should we hear another piece from Nue, maybe that you mentioned, Julia, that features Julia, or Corey? I mean, a lot of them do, but is there another piece you'd like to share from the album?
Yeah, this...
And what is Nue, by the way? Can you... the name itself, is that... What is the inspiration behind that?
Nue, I can't claim to really know, like the deep history behind it. It's more my own take on it. But Nue is a mythological... Japanese mythological... it's like almost like a spirit. I don't know exactly the history of it having a physical form, but it exists as this kind of beast, not necessarily attractive. It's like a kind of scary thing, but it has different parts of different animals. So it has the head of a lion and the tail of a snake, and
it's a complicated
thing, and it's very it's sort of pieced together, and I kind of like it because it's appealing but also sort of a little scary.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's something kind of enticing about it, but then it evokes different emotions, which I like. And that's kind of how I feel about the album too. Like it goes into different places.
It's nuance and duality.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely duality.
So what's this piece?
This is Mutable Signs. And this does feature Julia very heavily.
Let's jump in. It's dublive.com with my special guest, Tashi Wada. Mutable Signs. Tashi Wada with Yoshi Wada and Friends. One of those friends, her voice was heard there, Julia Holter. And again, this album is out now on Revenge International, part of the Freakway series, number 14 in that series. And so you went through this process of composition, recording raw material, shaping it in the studio with Cole, and now getting into also live performances again of this material. How does it feel to now be kind of playing this work back? And are you exclusively playing these pieces, or are you also kind of in live performances doing other things?
Right now we're playing the record pretty closely, with, you know, some changes and some added things and reordering. But my feeling is, because we're going to be doing a bit of touring this year and next year, is to start close to the album and then let it kind of diverge and new elements come in. But it's primarily a trio of Julia, Corey, and me doing these live shows. So, and it's fun to work out together because we've played together so much. And,
yeah.
Just to lay into it and start and see them on the other end after, like, you know, an hour or so.
Yeah. Hey, you're still there. Has, you mentioned earlier James Tenney, who you connected with at CalArts and have been involved in his archive and other things, and your father, Yoshi Wada, who's connected to Fluxus. There have been these kind of, you know, musical movements that are kind of either loose or very kind of defined that have manifestos and have, you know, these kind of uprisings where everything's kind of like burned down and built anew. In your world, do you feel like there's something kind of definable that you're part of, or is it more of kind of a fluid, you know, form these days? Do we need manifestos and movements now, or do you feel that we're building on what's come before, or burning what's come before?
You mean now?
Now, I mean, do you feel, or even where you're coming up through CalArts, did people say, we want to make something that we call our own, or was that not as important? Is it just making great work?
Yeah, it's a good question. I saw Simone did a talk last night, and after the talk, during the questions, people were asking her how she felt about now and what was going on, and she said it was she felt like it was a transitional period we're in right now. Mm-hmm. And she, you can take that however you know. Yeah. You want, I mean, there's so much going on right now, and she mentioned that with her generation, she felt like they had been sort of born into this sort of fertile ground that had been laid out by all these past generations. She mentioned, I mean, people like Duchamp and, you know, mm-hmm. all the Cage, and that there was all of this terrain that had been sort of broken open, and they were there, and they could basically just, you know, realize all of these things. And I think that's an interesting way to think about, you know, one's own work in relation to the work of the past. I would say now, personally, my focus tends to be more on, it's a little bit more nomadic, I guess I would say, like, where my interests go. I try to allow that to just kind of carry me along, versus like any sort of, sure. like, you know, with a manifesto, like a intentional like direction. It's more meandering, and I feel like that kind of inspiration for myself, at least, is the most in retrospect, is just, you know, you realize later why you went where you went. Yeah. And
intuition and feeling that creative impulse and pull and putting it into action. And it's been put into action. Tashiwada with Yoshiwada and Friends. Nue is the album continuation of Revenge International's Freakway series. Also, keep your ears on Saltern Imprint, Tashi's label, putting out great work here in Los Angeles and sharing it with the universe. We're going to end on most likely a snippet, a piece of a piece of a piece, but what is this that we're going to close on?
This is Litany, which is also from Nue.
Well, thanks for being on the show today, Tashi. Really appreciate it. And yeah. Thanks for making this work.
Thanks so much for having me.
Adios, folks. Here comes Litany from Tashiwada.
In Conversation was produced by Dublab, a nonprofit radio station broadcasting live from Los Angeles since 1999. Sound editing and theme song by Matea Bain. For more programming, visit dublab.com. And thank you for listening.